WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. The PBS investigative documentary series, Frontline, begins its 10th season this fall. It's public TV's highest-rated public affairs program. Since the series began, no subject has been too complex or controversial for Frontline to tackle. Frontline premiered with an investigation into the connections between the NFL, sports gambling, and organized crime. More recently, Frontline has investigated the October Surprise, sexual abuse at a daycare center, the Noriega connection, and the CIA's involvement with drug smugglers. David Fanning is the series creator and executive producer. I asked him if there are certain subjects he knows will generate an angry response.
We don't actually get a great deal of angry response. Sometimes people will write letters because they just object to the idea of us reporting Iran-Contra at all, having pulled together a massive chronology of the Iran-Contra affair called High Crimes and Misdemeanors. We did, in effect, the definitive television telling of that story. And the one or two letters would come in and say, why don't you leave this alone and why don't you stop beating this dead horse, etc. But those are not serious responses because it was an intelligent and carefully wrought piece of journalism.
Conservative media watchdog groups have described Frontline as being too liberal. What do you tell them when they say that?
Well, we also point to them that every now and then that there are also programs on Frontline that are not always that the left is not always happy with. We're prepared to call the shots as we see them. I think it's more a reflection of the fact that we will ask hard questions of the present administration and the past administrations. Both of them have been conservative Republican administrations, and inevitably, when you ask hard questions of people in power, we would be doing that equally if it were a Democratic administration. We think we're fair, and we think we're asking the tough questions about the stories of our times.
Can you give us a sense of what the process is like, of how you decide what subject you're going to cover, who's going to be the reporter to work on it, who's going to be the narrator, if that's a person who's different from the reporter, you know?
We send people out on research trips, initial research trips. Our producers are, in effect, journalists who work with camera crews. They work sometimes in conjunction with an investigative reporter, but more often they do the basic journalism themselves. And so they go out into an area. For example, when we went looking at the prosecution of child abuse cases, we began to look at a number of cases, and Ofra Bikel, the producer, started in New Jersey, I think went to Nashville, Tennessee, found another case somewhere else, and finally came through a small town in Eatonton, North Carolina, and paused there, spent a bit more time, began to talk to people, came back and said it's extremely hard, nobody wants to talk about it, but it's a fascinating case, and if we go back, we have no guarantee we'll ever be able to film. We could spend a long time and still get no access. And so we make a gamble at that point that we will indeed send her back there. And she spent as long as 3 months in the town getting to know people and finally gaining access, in the end making a very complex and powerful film called Innocence Lost, which was only the result of a long investment of time. So that's the beginning of the process. It's finding particular stories. We put a high premium on a single narrative story, one place, as opposed to the kind of sort of white paper idea of gathering a lot of different stories together and knitting them together with didactic reporting. So we tend to find a single story, look for the narrative, and dig in deep and find truth in the details. So that's the long process of research. That research will move into shooting, filming, which could take anything from a couple of weeks in some cases to over a period of months in other cases. And then the process of editing, which could take, in the case of a very fast turnaround, a matter of 2 or 3 weeks, and in the complex film, more like 3 to 4 months to edit.
My guest is David Fanning, the executive producer of the PBS documentary series Frontline. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is David Fanning, the executive producer of Frontline, Public Television's documentary and investigative series. Why do you think so much of television has basically given up on the documentary? I'm talking about the extended documentary. It's basically been given up on commercial television.
Well, I think that they made a fundamental mistake about how to make it. I think there's some...
How to make the documentary?
How to make the documentaries. I think that there are two great strands of documentaries in this country. One is the television documentary, which has a very particular grammar of its own, and the non-narrative, verite, more often verite documentary, which has been the world of film festivals and the independent filmmakers. And those two worlds very rarely met, and they haven't really cross-fertilized each other. Television documentaries on networks are an extension of news reporting. They are shot in much the same way. They are constructed with some of the same grammars. They tend to be broken up by commercials too. They don't have a chance to really build a continuing narrative. They tend to be episodic. The classic television documentary has four families and four stories from four different parts of the country with some experts stuck between and a correspondent with a microphone on camera occasionally. A Frederick Wiseman or an independent filmmaker who gets deep into a particular piece of Appalachian culture or wherever and follows with a camera is a very different creature. And what we've tried to do is actually see how to join those two together.
You were the co-producer, co-writer of what turned out to be a very controversial show in, I think it was 1980 on public television, The Death of a Princess. And I think a lot of our listeners might remember this. It was the story of a Saudi Arabian princess who was executed because she had an extramarital affair. And it was done as a docudrama since you really couldn't get, I mean, she was dead and a lot of other people. So obviously you couldn't talk with her and you couldn't talk with a lot of the other people on camera either. Is that why you did it as a docudrama?
Yes, it was a fascinating journey, actually, because we started off having been told a story about somebody who believed they knew something about her, and we went on a conventional research trip, if you will, to talk to those people, and we talked to a lot of people as we went along, and recorded them on a small audio tape, just for the record, and to have material to go back and to look to and listen and to sort out as we came back from the research period. And along the way, I realized, of course, that none of these people would ever talk on camera in a documentary fashion. Their lives would be threatened. They felt unable to do that. And so came back somewhat perplexed, but looked at this great volume of material, these transcripts of these audio tapes, and realized that in that lay a fascinating story, which was in two levels. On the one level, it was the pursuit of the facts about what really happened, because the story we'd originally been told turned out not to be true. But along the way, each person had some smidgen of evidence that added to the story. But on another level, you found that they were talking not so much about her, but about themselves. And so a Jordanian woman who tells the story of how she left her smothering family to run away with the man she loved, and how a young cousin was sent after her to supposedly kill her and didn't have the guts for it, told a story really about herself. And so each of those people, it became a journey into the private center of the Arab world. And we realized that the way to do it was to take these transcripts and to cut them down, and for those cut, edited transcripts to in effect become the film, and to have a fictional journalist, an actor in this case, travel through the heart of the Arab world talking to people. And in each case, we used mostly amateurs to play the part of people, because we changed their description somewhat. We would change them in age and location to protect them. But it was still, the heart of it was still the real words that were told by real people.
When The Death of a Princess was supposed to be broadcast, there was a lawsuit by a group of Saudi Arabian lawyers. It was a class action suit. And the idea was to prevent the program from being broadcast, right?
I think they tried to sue us, actually, for a class action suit on behalf of 700 million Muslims. We had
For misrepresenting them?
Misrepresenting Islam. Which is ironic, actually, because I think the film was very, very careful about Islam and very respectful of Islamic law, because the point of the film, and I think the point of outrage on the part of the Saudi royal family about the film, was the fact that the film drew closer to the conclusion that the girl had been executed not under Islamic law, but as an act of tribal justice. Because under the Sharia, the Quranic code of law, to prove adultery is very, very hard. The Prophet was very clear about this. The Prophet said that it would take 3 independent and honorable male witnesses or 6 independent and honorable female witnesses to the actual act to prove adultery. So clearly it's impossible to prove unless the person admits 3 times, and each time after the clear warning by the judge, the consequences of their admission, that they were in fact guilty of adultery. So it's something that never really actually happens. And it was clear as the story emerged that the girl and her lover, a foolish young woman who had fallen in love with a young man in this society in Saudi Arabia, had been made an example of by her grandfather, who was the king's elder brother, and had been brought by his bodyguards into a parking lot in downtown Jeddah, and they put a pile of sand in one corner of it and made her kneel, and had him watch as she was shot. That was her prerogative as a royal princess. And he was then beheaded rather badly by one of the prince's bodyguards. It was not a formal execution, and it was not done. So in effect, we were accusing a senior member of the Saudi royal family of breaking the law and of murder. So that was the heart of I think, the controversy. It was never couched in those terms.
So were you sued before or after the broadcast?
Well, we were sued after the broadcast, but it was thrown out as a nuisance suit. It was a nonsense suit. But it was a group of Saudi lawyers who were trying to ingratiate themselves with the kingdom.
What did you learn about lawsuits and controversy from this experience over a decade ago?
Well, I learned that controversy takes a great deal out of you, that it's very, very hard. You make a very particular decision to make a controversial film, and that it requires a great deal of work on your own as you go through it to hold up against criticism. It was not hard in the case of Death of a Princess, because I really believed in the film. There was no question about the factual basis of the film, although we were being attacked about the facts and that this was an invention and a fiction. We were very, very clear about what it was because we understood clearly about what we were doing. So I was very comfortable about defending the film, and that's the heart of it. I think you can stand up to any controversy if you believe in your material, if you believe in what you're saying, and if you believe in the essential integrity of it.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
David Fanning is the executive producer of the PBS series Frontline. Frontline begins its 10th anniversary season in October with a profile of Soviet dissident Andrei Sakharov. This is Fresh Air.